From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 30th day of July 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. We'll get an update of crop conditions from the statisticians in Illinois, Minnesota, and Iowa. Iowa, by the way, still about a week behind for corn, almost 2 weeks behind for soybeans, and of course, you know, Illinois is lagging behind as well. We'll also check in today on the agricultural energy situation. Dan O'Brien will join us from Kansas State University Extension, and it all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, on this Tuesday afternoon, let's take a look at what's been happening in Chicago. I'm traveling at this hour to deep southern Illinois, to the Dixon Springs Research Facility, for a beef cattle conference tonight. So no update of the settlement prices, but during the noon hour, futures were down pretty hard. And Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, is here to talk to us about it. Hey, Wayne, thanks for joining me early today.
Oh, no problem, Todd. You know, it's been sort of a red day. Unfortunately, it's sort of turned around Tuesday because we saw a little rally yesterday for a while. You know, the president did tweet this morning, and it wasn't kind thoughts about China, and that doesn't give us a good feeling of what might be going on over there. So we've been a little bit heavy over that. We did see some rain move across the Midwest yesterday, pretty light in most places, and pretty heavy in some really confined spaces. We're going to be a little cooler, which is good for the pollination we've got to look at yet to go here, but you know, we're going to be pretty awfully dry. So, I mean, it's going to be one of those things. Are we going to not get the degree days that we want from the cool weather, but we're not going to hurt the crop a lot, but we could use some moisture, that's for sure, Todd.
Hey, one of the things that we talked about when you were in for Commodity Week last week was the idea that farmers are feeling awfully bullish this crop, and oftentimes that's because they look out their window and they say, hey, my crop's pretty good, but I know the next guy over is not. And it just seems that they've got themselves positioned opposite of the marketplace at this time. Do they need to reconsider that position?
Well, I think we want to look at it very carefully. I know that as I talked to other farmers that are extremely bullish here today, I said, how are you feeling about the way the market's acting today? And their answer was a little more bullish because now it's a dip and I can maybe buy some more. It is a hard time. We generally at this time of year ease on down a little bit until we see a little bit more. And, you know, this August crop report is going to be very big. And is the government going to have good figures for this as late as this crop is? You know, a lot of times we don't figure they've got good ideas figured out by this point. And they're continuing to, I think, keep the yield up around the 166. A lot of farmers, three or four, come in today, and they said they went out to the field, they took their ear counts, the kernel counts around, and the kernels around aren't as big, and they're coming up 20 to 40 bushels less than what the field made last year, if everything stays and they don't lose any kernels.
If they can make it through the process. So there's just a lot of decisions and a lot of wait time at this point. So I suppose patience is what producers really need to consider as they look forward into the fall.
Yeah, you know, the one bad thing about it all is we're way above the South American corn price here for the fall offered into the export market, and that is a very scary thing for me to look for the rally to extend itself a lot higher unless we see the acreage cut back or the yield cut back more than it is.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, in the same week that the United States Department of Agriculture announced a $14.5 billion trade aid package for U.S. farmers last week, it also announced a proposed cut in SNAP benefits. That's the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. The department won't say whether it has an estimate of how many school children could stop qualifying for the federal school meals programs under its new proposal to curb SNAP eligibility. Here's some context for that debate. During the run-up to the 2018 Farm Bill, Democrats weren't happy with Republicans for a proposal that they put forth to curtail broad-based categorical eligibility, which allowed states to expand the number of low-income households eligible for SNAP. The proposal could have dropped some 265,000 children from automatically qualifying for free school meals. Now, that's according to the CBO, or the Congressional Budget Office, and had to do with a farm bill that's long passed. Now, the Trump administration has rolled out a proposed rule crackdown on the practice. And Democrats, again, aren't happy. House Education and Labor Chairman Bobby Scott on Monday wrote to Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue asking for USDA's internal estimates. The congressman said Perdue's staff, in a phone briefing with committee staff, discussed department estimates that the proposed rule will result in more than 500,000 children losing their automatic eligibility for free school meals. But there are no such figures in USDA's breakdown of the proposed rule impact. In his letter, Scott, a Democrat, asked Perdue to amend the regulatory analysis to include the impact on school meal eligibility and to restart the public comment period, which is now underway. Well, let's switch gears now and move to trade. The Japanese Economic Revitalization Minister will be in town on Thursday and Friday, Washington, D.C., that is, for trade talks. Negotiators want to strike a mini-deal focused on agriculture and automobiles. An agreement on farm goods would be big for U.S. producers who fear losing their share of the large Japanese market to competitors like Canada and Australia, now that TPP is in effect without the United States. Those negotiations, by the way, will happen without the USTR, or United States Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, or Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, who both are visiting Shanghai this week for negotiations with Chinese officials. The president weighed in on those discussions earlier today with a series of tweets. He says China is doing very badly, the worst, he thinks, in 27 years. And that he wasn't happy that China has not been buying agricultural products like they were supposed to do. The president went on to say that while his team was in China this week to negotiate, that they should probably just wait out the election to see if he wins or not. The problem, he says, with them waiting, however, is that, quote, if and when I win, the deal that they get will be much tougher than what we are negotiating now. Or no deal at all. We have all the cards, wrote the president in his tweet. Our past leaders, he says, never got it. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows as of Sunday, 58% of the corn crop across the nation was silking. The rolling five-year average is 83%. 13% of the crop has now entered the dough stage. The five-year average is 23%. And the crop is said to be in 47% good and 11% excellent condition. That's up one percentage point between the two categories. Soybeans are now 57% blooming, 79% is the rolling five-year average, 21% of the crop is setting pods, 45% is the five-year average, and it's said to be in 45% good and 9% excellent condition. Last week, those numbers were 46%. And 8%, respectively. Now, here are updates from the state statisticians in Iowa, Minnesota, and Illinois.
This is Brad Medlock, agricultural statistician for the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service. This past week brought below normal temperatures and little to no rain across much of the state, as Iowa farmers had 5.9 days suitable for field work during the weekend in July 28, 2019. Fieldwork activities included scouting, spraying fungicides and insecticides, and harvesting hay and oats. Topsoil moisture condition was rated 4% very short, 21% short, 71% adequate, and 4% surplus. Districts in the southern third of Iowa and east central district reported topsoil moisture conditions as over 40% short to very short. Some counties within those districts were also rated as abnormally dry for the first time this season, according to the July 25, 2019 U.S. Drought Monitor. 69% of the corn crop has begun to silk, 13 days behind last year and 8 days behind the 5-year average. 7% of the crop reached the dough stage, nearly 1 week behind both last year and average. Corn condition rated 65% good to excellent. 65% of the soybean crop has started to bloom, 13 days behind last year and 10 days behind average. 13% of the crop has started setting pods, nearly 2 weeks behind average. Soybean condition rated 62% good to excellent. The second cutting of alfalfa hay reached 76%, 6 days behind average. A third cutting of alfalfa hay has started with 2% complete statewide. Cooler temperatures this past week helped improve livestock conditions. For the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Regional Field Office, this is Brad Medlock.
This is Brad Summa, Director of the Heartland Regional Office, covering both Missouri and Illinois with USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Overall, a good week weather-wise for much of the state of Illinois, as there were 5.8 days suitable for field work. Statewide, the average temperature was 80.7 degrees, which was 3.9 degrees above normal. Precipitation averaged 1.1 inches across the state and was 0.17 inches above normal. Topsoil moisture supply was rated at 1% very short, 19% short, 68% adequate, and 12% surplus. For the corn crop, the corn silking reached 36% this week, up 17% from a week ago, and compared to 96% last year. Corn dough was at 1% compared to 29% last year and 18% for the five-year average. Corn condition was rated 4% very poor, 14% poor, 39% fair, 39% good, and 4% excellent. Soybeans emerged reached 96% compared to 91% last week and 100% last year. Soybeans blooming was at 30%, up 18% from a week ago, and compared to 87% last year. Soybean setting pods reached 2% this week. The soybean condition was rated 5% very poor, 13% poor, 37% fair, 40% good, and 5% excellent. Winter wheat harvested reached 94% this week compared to 90% last week and 100% a year ago. Again, this has been Brad Summa with the Heartland Regional Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in St. Louis, Missouri, and I've been reporting the Illinois crop progress conditions.
This is Dan Loftus, State Statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with a weekly crop progress and condition report for the week ending July 28, 2019. There were 5.2 days suitable for fieldwork during the week, as most of Minnesota received only light rain. Topsoil moisture condition was rated 1% very short, 4% short, 71% adequate, and 24% surplus. Silked corn at 54% was 11 days behind last year and 1 week behind the five-year average. Corn condition was rated 56% good to excellent, a slight decrease from the previous week. Soybeans blooming reached 69% this week, that's 8 days behind last year and 1 week behind average. 27% of soybeans were setting pods, that's 8 days behind last year and 5 days behind average. Soybean condition rated 60% good to excellent. 79% of spring wheat crop was coloring or beyond, that's 3 days behind last year. Spring wheat condition rated 83% good to excellent, that's down from the previous week. Oats were 83% in or beyond the coloring stage, only a day behind normal. 3% of the oats for grain have been harvested. Oat condition was rated 70% good to excellent, improving from the previous week. Barley coloring or beyond reached 87%, now 2 days ahead of the average. Barley condition rated 79% good to excellent. The second cutting of alfalfa hay reached 78% this week, that's 3 days behind normal. Pasture condition rated 74% good to excellent, and some reporters expressed concerns over short forage supplies for the coming winter. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their updates each and every week right here on Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report. We're now joined by Don Day. He's at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, to take a look at the forecast for the Corn Belt. Hey, Don, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start in the Northwest and then work our way towards Ohio. What do you see in the next week?
Well, in the next week, what we do see is that some of the central and western areas of the Corn Belt will see some rain. It does look like the Dakotas, Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri, some areas of eastern Kansas, and portions of central and northern western Illinois stand the best chance of picking up some occasional shower and thunderstorm activity. We're going to see an influx of moisture come up out of the southwest United States. It's going to go clockwise around a high pressure ridge that's over the southern plains. And that's going to bring what we call sometimes that ring of fire, where that's going to produce some shower and thunderstorm activity in the central, northern, and western Corn Belt. Areas in the eastern Corn Belt, we're talking about Indiana, Ohio, they're not going to be as much in the rain here over the next week to 10 days, although they'll see some.
So if that circulation is to the clockwise and is coming out of the southwest, it'll go furthest to the north to begin with, I suppose, and up along the western edge of that clockwise direction. I'm interested in those areas when it comes back down in Iowa and in Illinois that have been without rain, and there aren't very big areas, but they'll really want to know whether this is going to drop something on them or not.
I think there's a good chance of it, and I would say that at least in the short term, I don't know, I'm talking about here over the next 3 or 4 days into the start of the weekend, we really don't expect a lot going on. Most of the rain chances that we see coming will be early to the middle to the end of next week, and I do think that the coverage of rainfall over those states you just mentioned should be pretty good. We don't see rainfall amounts going crazy, but we do see, you know, 1 to 2 to 3 inch rains in some of those heavier showers and thunderstorms. And again, this is going to be next week when most of it comes.
And then for the month of August, do you have any indication of how that'll turn out yet?
It really looks like August is going to be very vanilla flavored in the sense that we don't see anybody off the charts hot. We don't see anybody unseasonably cold. And we do see that the rainfall is going to be off and on and frequent enough, I think, to continue with some favorable growing conditions. We don't see any extreme heat, but we do see temperatures staying at average, and temperatures and heat unit accumulation looks favorable.
Hey, thanks so much, Don.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Let's turn our attention now, as we do each and every Tuesday afternoon, to the agricultural energies. Dan O'Brien is here from K-State Extension. He follows the ag energies pretty closely. Hey, thanks so much for being with us today.
Sure. Good to be here and help out, Todd.
So each week you try to update, or at least once a month, the agricultural energy sector, and I think they've been having a pretty tough time in ethanol, at least from the reports I've seen. What do the numbers show?
Well, it does show that if you just look at from January to the present, in your part of the country, Iowa, Illinois area, January we averaged about $1.17 per gallon for ethanol, and we have increased that up here in June and July to about $1.46. But the costs have gone up, and that's the big issue. We had $1.39 back in January, $1.44 in February, and now we're up to $1.69, $1.72. And really that follows from corn prices moving higher. Net returns by the time you run through all that, we haven't seen a lot of change. Again, that January-February period, we were losing about 22 cents, got a little bit better. March and April, only losing 13, 14. But now from May, June, and July, we're running 22 to 27 cents under break even. So, and you do see indications from the industry talking about plant idling, temporary plant closures, et cetera. Some of that's probably has to do with prolonged losses and probably worries about what could happen if we really see corn prices move to the higher side.
Yeah, so we've talked about plant closings and idling, and they'll shut down for 2 weeks or slow down in the past when we've had higher corn prices. But it seems to me that those were happening at much, much higher corn prices. Is the difference today that the price of crude oil or the input stock for gasoline is just much lower than it was back then?
Well, you have various factors. I think when we were idling at those times, at least the corn price, again, when we were looking at 2007, 2008, 12, 13, we really jumped higher. Right now we're looking at Dease corn, you know, 230, 240, 250, something like that, with fears of what might come out in terms of acreage numbers, lower yields, production south of 13 billion bushels, perhaps being out there coming in the fall. And really, if you're an ethanol plant, I think you're probably looking at what could happen to your main input price, i.e. corn, and wondering if your output sales revenue can keep up with it. So, Todd, I guess my thoughts are, you know, in the ag area, we're so focused on what could happen to prices if we have a little supply, but we're not paying a lot of attention, not as much, on how higher prices will affect the usage side. In fact, probably one reason that futures prices haven't jumped as much as people are thinking about may be that, we're seeing some signs of softening demand as these prices have moved to the higher side.
Yeah, so that would be both in the export market and certainly in the ethanol market. And it takes up, 38 to 40% of all of corn usage during the year. You said, by the way, 230 to 240, and I think you meant 430.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I guess I'm stuck back in year 2000, 2003. So sorry about that.
Yes.
Yeah, I meant to say 4. Thank you. Yep.
You're welcome. It's an easy, it's really easy to do that. Biodiesel plants, you've done some numbers on them as well. What did they show?
Yeah, for the last 2 months, losses of 3 and 4 cents per gallon, nowhere near the losses on a per unit basis that the ethanol plants have. And really, since the first of the year, we've been running at just a break even or a little bit better, a little bit of a loss in April. Made some about 9 cents a gallon in May, and here these last couple months have moved a little bit lower. And for biodiesel prices, I've had a little bit of gyration of late. Again, May 279, June about 272, now July up to about 281 is what we have through the 26th. The break-even prices of 285 here, the estimate for July, the highest we'll have had since March when we got to 286. So, you know, you stand back and look at that, and gee whiz, 3 or 4 cents a gallon, you keep going, and you again, that's not the major percentage loss that you're seeing over in the ethanol side. So I don't know that we'll see the dramatic impact, at least yet, of losses in the biodiesel side, as we're very likely to see if some of the worst fears of ethanol plants come to fruition anyway, as corn prices would jump markedly.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Thanks, Todd. Have a good day.
That's Dan O'Brien from K-State Extension. He joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Medium and University of Illinois Extension. Don't forget to check us out online at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find all of our daily programming from the Opening Market Report to the Closing Market Report and everything in between. Each and every Thursday, we post Commodity Week on the website as well. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.